We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
I think if you're singularly focused on just LP and you're really good at it, you just might be at risk. You want to put yourself in a position to manage and own additional areas if you're asked to. You don't want to be that person where they only see as being one-dimensional.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk about retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Today, I'm turning over the microphone to my friend and colleague, Jen Overstreet.
Thanks, Bill. Today, we're recording at NRF Protect, our annual loss prevention and cyber risk event. And we're especially excited to be speaking with Keith White, who is the EVP of Loss Prevention and Global Sustainability at Gap, Inc., and a longtime leader in the retail loss prevention community. In just a moment, we'll be chatting with Keith about his biggest priorities and what's happening in the world of loss prevention. Here with me to talk to Keith is Stores Magazine's own Chris Stewart. Hi, Chris. How are you this morning?
I'm fantastic, Jen. How are you?
I'm good. And I should also mention that Chris does everything else for NRF as well.
Thank you.
Keith, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Before we get started talking about LP, I wanted to start with you and your career journey. Can you tell us, how did you get to be EVP of Loss Prevention and Global Sustainability at Gap?
Well, you know, it's been a long journey. Of course, I didn't wake up one morning and arrive here. I started, fresh out of college at a retailer working in supply chain, working for the distribution center. And I remember when I first got the loss prevention job, I attended college and received an undergrad degree in law enforcement administration and a graduate degree in criminology, and really thought I would take some type of traditional law enforcement path. But a friend called me up at Christmas break and said, hey, they want me to interview for this loss prevention job. I already have one. So I gave him your name. Is that okay? Well, at the time, I was working the midnight shift at Burger King. So this loss prevention job sounded really good. And I said, oh yeah, by the way, what's loss prevention? Didn't even know what it was. Went on the interview, and you know how interviews go. Not only do you answer questions, but you get to ask questions. So as the interview went on, I found out that this job and this career path was really interesting because it represented a really nice intersection between managing and leading teams and being involved in a business, which I had academic training for and I also like doing, but also investigations and dealing with the bad guy and, you know, righting the wrongs that occur. And I got really excited about it, got the job, and never looked back. I stayed with that company for about 3 years, and then I was recruited by Target. And I worked for Target for 11 years. And then after Target, or I should say, while I was at Target, I was recruited by Gap. And I've been at Gap for the last 19 years. Now, the difference with my career trajectory at Gap was that Gap saw me not just as a loss prevention professional, someone with a lot of expertise or a subject matter expert, but they also saw me as a general manager, someone who could lead other functions. So early in my career with Gap, they asked me if I would take on corporate administration, which included business continuity planning. It included special events, corporate travel, the culinary division. And those were areas where, you know, you could say, and I remember, you know, my boss at the time, you know, said that you're a good leader, you'll learn all of this stuff. It also included corporate real estate, which is a big portion of it. And she was absolutely right, because you know, what I didn't know, she knew I was resourceful enough. And she also knew that I was the type of person who could lead and learn at the same time, which I always preach to my team when I get a new assignment. It's okay for you to learn. I expect you to, but also want you to lead at the same time. Be there at those critical decisions. Be ready to make them and jump in and support and direct the team, even though you may not have all of the information and all of the technical expertise that particular genre requires. I just know that you're a good leader and you'll make the right decision when the time comes. And that's been true for me throughout my career at Gap up until, you know, 8 months ago when I received the promotion to Executive Vice President of Global Sustainability. And this has really been an interesting assignment because I actually feel like there's a better nexus, believe it or not, between global sustainability and loss prevention. And I'm sure you're probably wondering, well, how do you see that? Well, in one way, I'm charged with the responsibility to protect the planet. In the other vein, I'm charged with the responsibility to preserve the planet. And believe it or not, you know, as we work in areas, for example, I was on a trip this spring in India. We have a Women in Water program. You probably don't know this, but I think 84% of the population of India does not have direct access to clean water. And when it's women involved, it's even more exacerbated because they're taking care of the children. They're to run the households and to keep things going. And it exacerbates all types of issues. For example, something as simple as going to the restroom can expose you to potential sexual assaults or what have you. I mean, it's amazing. So as I think about my responsibilities with respect to global sustainability, you know, giving people better access to water makes them safer, you know, or working on the labor relations side, making sure that factories are meeting our standards and doing all the things that we would require if they were, let's say, in America, makes it a safer place for people to work in. And so as I think about, you know, my approach to this role, it absolutely fits. And it's even more interesting.
That's a really, really fascinating approach. And I've never seen that title before. I was asking my colleagues, have you seen this before? Do other organizations do it? Do you know of any other organizations that put that together in that way?
Right now, I have no counterpart in the industry. But I will say this, and this is a message to leaders in the loss prevention space per se. I think if you're singularly focused on just LP and you're really good at it, you just might be at risk. Because the way the industry is going and the requirements they're asking of leaders in terms of your ability to absorb more, have bigger bandwidth, impact in greater areas, you want to put yourself in a position to manage and own additional areas if you're asked to. You don't want to be that person where they only see as being one-dimensional. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it, but I think as you rise in this particular field, based on the trends that I've seen in the industry, there's a lot of consolidation going on, and people are seeing folks as great general managers who happen to have an expertise in loss prevention and ultimately in other areas that they think they should. So
it sounds like you almost have the ability to kind of create the job. I mean, were you involved when they came up with this job, when they, you know, said, okay, EVP, loss prevention and global sustainability, were you involved in that? Were you?
There was a discussion. There were several discussions about what, you know, potential exists out there. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, Chris, you know, that's exactly where you want to be.
Yeah.
You want to have people think of your skills and your abilities in a way that you're not necessarily making an inquiry about, you know, what's available or could I do more?
Yeah.
They're actually, you know, running through a myriad of options for you to, you know, kind of be a partner in deciding, you know, how could you contribute better and more impactful to the business? So there was some discussion and, you know, fortunately it worked out.
So you have this broad scope of responsibilities mm-hmm. now. What are the things that are top of mind for you, you know, in the next year, 2 years? What are the top challenges that you guys are working on right now?
Okay. I'm going to compartmentalize for you for a second. If we're just looking at the loss prevention or corporate security side of the business, there are several emerging trends that I think you have to be aware of. Number one, is the active shooter phenomena is not going away. It's only increasing. And it is of paramount importance that your stores, your team members, your corporate headquarters, your supply chain, DC team members are ready to respond in the event that something happens, you know, God forbid, but that if something happens, they're about as prepared as they can be to hopefully avoid it or minimize the impact of it. That's, I think right now, that's the number one issue facing people in the LP industry, just making sure that there's a high level of awareness. People are actually trained and they're ready to take action. They don't freeze up. They understand that these things happen. They are unfortunate, but they're rapidly making decisions to save lives or to minimize, you know, the potential loss of life or injury. So that's item number one. Number two is the opiates, and I'm going to call it an epidemic, is really sweeping across America. And I think when it happens in, you know, the inner city urban areas, sometimes there's a tendency to think, well, that's what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. But when it starts to happen in the suburbs and the rural areas, people really pay attention. And I think it's driving people who are educated, who have access to wealth, to make decisions or to do things that they typically wouldn't do, whether it's shoplifting behavior, whether it's, you know, violent behavior, or what have you. And I think as a loss prevention professional, you have to really understand, you know, what this drug's impact is on your business or the potential for its impact on your business. It's a dangerous trend. We're seeing an increase of homelessness as a result of it. You're seeing a transient population that's willing to steal for the drug. You know, they're not stealing in a traditional sense of, okay, I'm going to sell it to a fence, I'm going to make money, and then I'm going to do what I want to do. It's no. To get my next high, I need to walk in that store, grab a stack of jeans, and then walk down to the corner, give it to the dealer and say, okay, can you give me some now? You know, and that's a real sad place to be in. I don't mean to paint a very bleak picture, but I want to be real. That's something that we're all contending with. The third thing that we're contending with is civility or the lack thereof. People are not civil. For whatever reason, and there's a number of them, I won't go into that, but people are not civil with one another. Mm-hmm. The behavior of customers and even employees in some cases escalates so fast when they feel that they're offended or have been encroached on in one way or another. It just takes the slightest thing to set people off, and you have to prepare your stores to deal with escalated customer behaviors. Mm-hmm. And it's a must. I think before it was kind of a luxury, or maybe you just did it where you thought you know that you would have a contact with a greater population of people. Now, for us, it's the price of admission. You know, as a leader in our store, you have to understand escalated customer behavior, and you have to be able to mitigate it or go down your checklist until you get to that final option where sometimes you may need to involve law enforcement. It's a sad commentary on where we're at as a society, that the smallest thing, you know, will cause people to yell and scream obscenities, mm-hmm. and maybe even, you know, get aggressive enough to push someone or punch someone. But it's something, you know, that I think as a loss prevention professional, you have to be aware of. So that's,
yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that, because I always think, well, are we just hearing about it more, or is it actually happening more? But you're definitely training for it, and
I'm not just giving you anecdotal, an anecdotal perception. I mean, the quantitative or the quantitative data would suggest that we're just seeing more incidents of it, and it's just something to be aware of and handle right. If handled well, you can be okay with it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if you don't handle it well, you actually cause it to escalate faster and in a more, you know, damaging sense. So something to be aware of. Okay, so I was compartmentalized. So that's, can I close that compartment?
Yes, certainly.
Let's close that compartment. Yeah, you've probably heard enough of that one. So on the global sustainability side, it's a number of things, but I'll see if I could just give you our top three. Number one is, you know, really making sure that from a renewable energy or a greenhouse gas emissions perspective, you know, we're taking all the actions we can, you know, from an in-house perspective. So we're being way more efficient with the use of energy, lighting, and stuff like that. But also being smart about, we just made a really nice purchase of what is called a virtual power purchase agreement, a VPPA, which means that we bought into a windmill farm in North Carolina that's going to generate energy, and it's going to offset, you know, over half of our greenhouse gas emissions, which is super smart, super efficient, something we're very excited about. And it puts us in a leadership role when you think about apparel retailer and offsetting, you know, GHG. The second thing that we're focused on, and I think most retailers are, is, you know, managing your use of water in the production of your jeans and all of your goods, and making sure that the factories who produce those goods, as well as the mills, have some type of a sustainability program, you know, where they're able to, you know, reuse water where they need to. They're smart about their water runoff. We just entered into an agreement with a facility called Arwin, where we partnered with them. It's in India, so that they're able to use water efficiently for the factory that they support, but also they're able to help out the community in terms of creating, you know, clean water to service them. So just use an effective and efficient use of water is a big deal. And then lastly, for us, it's around sustainable cotton. Just sourcing more sustainable cotton so that, you know, we're kinder to the environment. We're smart about the fibers that we put in, you know, creating our goods and things like that.
How much input or involvement does Gap have with their suppliers when it comes to the supplier's sustainability? Are you working with the factories to help them implement sustainability practices? Are you, you know, saying if you don't, you know, if you guys don't do this, we're going to go to another factory?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a partnership, Chris, in every sense of the word. And the thing I love about the factory partners that we have out there is that they've already seen this as an opportunity. So they understand that if they're moving in concert with us on all the items that we're holding our own selves accountable to, it not only makes them, you know, more efficient and kinder to the environment, but it also makes them more attractive to other retailers. Sure. I mean, because we're not in this game alone. So it's a true partnership, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be a stick and carrot relationship. You know, it's more about us being more innovative, because at the end of the day, you know, being more sustainable is actually more economical.
Sure.
You know, mm-hmm. So it only behooves them to take actions like this. So I'm really pleased to say that they've come to the table willingly, and in some cases, proactively.
Yeah. I was thinking about, there was a news report that we were talking about earlier today where the Wrangler has figured out a way to dye jeans without water. And mm-hmm. I was thinking about it right when you said, and you know, there's the water factor. Are you guys like looking at innovations like that?
Not only that, but you know, we're also exploring the possibility of giving, you know, our apparel goods a second life, so that you recycle those goods. Mm-hmm. You know, it's called essentially a closed loop process,
yeah.
where the clothes that we're wearing right now will recreate themselves in another form and fashion sense, without, you know, ending up in some, you know, stockpile or what have you. So we're exploring that and a number of other things.
Mm-hmm. It's cool to hear you talking about this, all this sustainability issues and the trends that are emerging. I was wondering, you've been in this role for a short time. I was wondering if there's something that was particularly exciting for you as you've taken this on, something that you didn't know before you got into it that you would be dealing with, or something you wanted to geek out over, you know, once you found out more about it.
Wow. There have been a number of things. I mean, you know, when you're working in the global sustainability world, first of all, the places that we create our product, whether it's Bangladesh or parts of India or Vietnam or Cambodia or China, are fascinating places alone. So our impact, and I always knew this generally, but when you're like right there and you're visiting these factories and you're mm-hmm. seeing people work, the retail impact, retail's impact on all of these other countries' economies and their abilities to, you know, supply jobs and, you know, create these sustainable economies is just absolutely amazing. So that was even more of an eye-opener for me. But I would say the thing that I've, probably geeked out about was this Women in Water initiative mm-hmm. that, you know, we've embarked upon. Gap has what is called a PACE program for women, professional advancement and career enhancement, where we go into these developing countries and we train women who typically work at our factories. And in some cases, we actually go out into more rural areas and we work with women and we teach and work with them on all different types of skill sets that allow them to support and lead and relate to not just their professional job environment, but also their personal lives and how they manage and lead their families. And it's just been an incredible program. So if you have a PACE program already in place, which I knew about, when you start to combine that with water, and we call it Women in Water Alliance, it really gets interesting because what you realize is that you're not just impacting the lives of those women, you're impacting the lives of those women and their families and the surrounding communities around them. For example, you know, one of the things that the Women in Water Alliance does is it allows for small, we would call them small business loans. Mm-hmm. The equivalent of $100 will either get you a water filter, will allow you to build a restroom on your property, will allow you to pipe in, you know, clean water. So you do any one of those three things, and they're actually life-changing events mm-hmm. for the women who are recipients of it. But if you look further downstream, there's like an army of people standing behind them that are going to benefit from it too. Yeah. So that's probably been the thing that's kind of caught my eye, that you can change the world. Maybe one initiative at a time, I think that's not too ambitious.
Can we come back to the loss prevention side of your...
By all means.
Open up that box again. can you talk a little bit about how technology is changing that landscape? And, you know, we were thinking about things like the facial recognition, and it kind of ties in with that unconscious bias factor where AI is maybe, you know, being trained on faces of one with certain characteristics. And then I'm not sure if there's any of that. Are you thinking about any of those things?
We are. I mean, I think every retailer is looking at the potential that exists with facial recognition, a potential that exists with remote cameras. For example, on my cell phone right now, we're testing, I think, about 18 stores where I could literally pull up video cameras for stores across the country, mm-hmm. and you can watch customers shop in our stores real time mm-hmm. on my cell phone. And if you saw something that was concerning, mm-hmm. You could, call up an LP or the store manager and have them address it. If you were the district manager or the regional director and the store needed to be set differently or the line for the customers was too long, you could address that. So yeah, facial recognition is kind of the sexy part of what everybody thinks about and wants to go after, which we're definitely looking at. But for me, when you look at the infrastructure that we've created with all of the different cameras we use and how much the technology has grown in that space, there's a ton of application that we've left on the table that I think as an industry we can capitalize on, not just on behalf of LP, but certainly on behalf of delivering, much better, greater, easier customer service.
Well, I mean, that's what customers love about technology, right? Because I can walk into a store and you will know who I am and you will have all of my information. And then, but, there's also that risk where you have all of my information, and how do I know you're going to be careful with my information? Can you talk a little bit about how you are approaching that aspect of it?
Well, there's a lot of research on our part to make sure, and here's how we characterize it. We want to be cool with the technology, but not creepy.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference, but it's a very fine line. And what you want to do is obviously protect, you know, the customer's privacy, but you want to give her the ability to figure out to what level of service she wants.
Yeah.
Because there'll be some customers who will say, I don't want you to, you know, I don't want to opt into anything. I don't want you to recognize me when I come in the store. I just want to shop and, you know, be, you know, very discreet about it. And then there'll be other customers who'll be at the other end of the spectrum. If you got a deal and I'm in the mall, I better get a text.
Right. I want you to know I am in the mall. I want you to guide me there. Tell me how to get to the store.
I don't want to miss one deal.
Yeah.
You include me. And so what you do is you kind of create this continuum that accommodates both.
Yeah.
You know, one where, you know, if she is just completely tech savvy and wants to be involved in everything, you can meet her needs. And then for customer who is tech savvy, but doesn't want to opt into really a whole lot, just wants to be that unanimous, discreet shopper. And then she'll let you know to what level she wants to step up to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the discussion that's going on. And, you know, I think right now we do a really good job of, you know, meeting that need. But I think with the use of the future use of facial recognition and other parts of, you know, our AI or as it relates to our camera systems, I think we're going to start to wow a lot of customers when they actually come into the store.
Where are you on that spectrum?
I actually think we're right past the midpoint. I think we're very progressive. We have cameras in all of our stores, and we're testing the right applications, and we're pushing the envelope. But I wouldn't say we're there yet. I think we have a little ways to go, but we're definitely a long ways down that road, which is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Keith, we are almost out of time.
Okay.
We have one more segment, which we call Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
We're just going to ask you to complete a sentence or answer a question really quick. Don't think about it too hard. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Chris, start us off.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be probably a professional athlete.
What's the last gift you gave someone?
I gave my daughters and my wife a bouquet of flowers. I often, you know, just surprise them with flowers. I love going into, I think more because I love going into the florist and just looking at the beauty of the flowers. And then they always, you know, are the benefactors of what I end up getting.
That's lovely.
So I love doing that.
If you didn't do this job, what other job would you like to do?
If I didn't do this job, I think I would like to, you know, maybe be doing something in communications. I like tracking the news. I like interviewing people. I like talking about what's going on. So, you know, maybe having a career in broadcasting.
If there were a movie made about your life, who would you want to play you?
Oh, it's got to be Denzel.
Oh.
It's got to be Denzel. I'm glad my wife didn't hear that.
She will. If you could instantly master one skill, what would it be?
A foreign language.
Which one?
I would start with Spanish and then, you know, work the gambit. I love traveling internationally, and one of the disadvantages you can have at times is when you don't speak the language, and that's definitely something I need to work on.
Mm-hmm. All right, one last one. What is your pet peeve at work?
That's easy. I think when I see people, it's one or two things. They're even not treating each other with respect. I just think that's always got to be top number one. And then two, not working as hard as they could. And I just think that the two should be, you know, automatic. Always treat people like you want to be treated, and always, you know, give your best effort.
That's great. Well, Keith, thank you so much. This has been a really fun conversation to have. Very interesting. Before we go, where can someone go to find out more about what you guys are doing with Gap, with your initiatives?
That's easy. We have a wonderful website that would allow them to kind of check in on a number of things. Our comms department is really good about responding to all types of inquiries. So I think that would help. And of course, they now know who I am. So if I can help, I'd be more than happy to.
All right. It was a pleasure talking with you today. And Chris, thanks so much for co-hosting with me. And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion on our website, retailgetsreal.com. And please send your feedback to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks for listening.